The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
I mean your Amazon account, Nina.
Oh my God. Oh my goodness. Well, I think I'm being very blasé about this, so let's see what the hell you uncover.
Maintain the blasé.
Oh, yes, I shall.
Hello, welcome back. It's my mate bought a toaster. And if you were wondering what was the first thing that genius comedian, writer, ventriloquist, podcaster Nina Conti ever bought on Amazon, well, you'd have to go back to 2005. Nina Conti, 2005.
Oh God, I didn't know we were going back that far. Shit. Okay, what'd I buy?
It's a really good one.
Oh, shit. What is it?
No, it's fine. You have every reason to be very proud. It's Abbey Road by the Beatles.
Oh, right. Wow.
Well, that's great. That's great.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fine. Before it became released on Spotify and everything. They were quite fussy at the beginning, weren't they, the Beatles?
Wasn't there some issue with Apple because their label was called Apple? And so they weren't... Didn't Apple, the technological giants, didn't Steve Jobs say... We will never encroach into audio. Don't worry about us. We're not going to come for you, audio, to the record label Apple. And then history does tell that Apple definitely went into the world of audio.
God.
And so they fell out with the Beatles label. I believe that's true.
Yeah, that makes sense. So this takes me back to there's a toddler in the back seat of the car. And and it's a little darling and all those songs. And he's kind of getting into them. 2005.
Yes.
Yeah. That's where I am. I'm at Brent Cross Shopping Centre, mildly depressed, trying to... this is sacrilegious, but I don't really want to listen to the Beatles. I mean, I've had enough.
Yeah, it's possible to over-listen, but it's also possible to listen to certain artists and certain albums, and it takes you back to that moment, which wasn't maybe the happiest moment.
Yeah, it was slightly lonely, but it was important. You know, it was a milestone. Mm. It was a new life that I wasn't used to yet. It was a steep learning curve. And it was tough keeping the kid up. It was tough keeping him from getting upset in the car often. You know, music helped. It's all that stuff. Oh,
yeah,
poor Nina.
You poor girl. Having to go shopping in your lovely car with your beautiful child around Brent Cross Shopping Centre.
Oh, God, I'd love to meet him again. I mean, that's just tragic that you lose all the children that your children were in every age. Don't you get like a great big party? We welcome them all back, the 2-year-old and the 7-year-old version. And then they can all be really nice to each other.
Oh, my God. I would love my kids to be able to meet each other when they were the same age. I do think about that a lot and how well they would get on if they met at three. But equally, it's still very raw. How old are your kids now? Where are you at now?
What are your numbers? This is why 2005, he was 1.5 or something. He's turning 17 in about a week
don't.
Or two. Yeah.
So he'll be driving to Brent Cross Shopping Centre with driving lessons?
Yes, with his young slut pregnant girlfriend.
isn't that the bonus track on Abbey Road? Young slut pregnant girlfriend. I'm sure that's definitely a Ringo track.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, good luck to them.
I like that you've been so candid and honest about those first couple of years with kids, because I fucking hated it. Doesn't mean I hate my child.
No, God.
I hated those things where you had to fill the day with something to do, and you sort of like you've described, like a song can become part of your routine. It's all about routines and rituals, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what gets you through it. But at the same time, when you look back, that's sort of the most depressing thing about it.
Yes, it is. And you're spending time in malls and you're hearing the same songs in Mothercare that you used to get drunk to. And it's kind of disorientating because it's like a personal lockdown in a way.
That is so spot on. If I go into Mothercare and you hear like "You Only Get What You Give" by the New Radicals, and I'm like, I was so drunk, I was sick in a field listening to that in 1996, and now I'm buying nappies.
Yeah, look at these booties. It is worth just saying again, it's not that you don't love the children, it's that you don't love parenting. Parenting is worrying. It's such a responsibility. I mean, it's just sort of a constant concern. And so when you first get given that, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Perfect. And there's no part-timing. There's no part-timing that shit. You're in, man.
No, you've got a perfect, unspoiled being, total blank canvas. Good luck.
Yeah. And then you get to ruin it. And then they become a father at 17 by the sounds of things. So that's great. Okay, fine. All right. So that's 2005. Let's leave you depressed at Brent Cross. And we're going to leap ahead now to 2008, Nina Conti. And excellent stuff here. Oh, this is good, Nina.
Yeah.
These are great. Yeah, you're coming across very well. We've done Beatles in 2005. 2008, The Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin, the complete second series. This is
bought
the 19th
that?
Of September.
I've never seen it.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I wouldn't even say that was my cup of tea. I think that must have been some research for a... I must have been researching some sort of self-tape. Well, it wasn't self-tape in those days. I must have been researching an interview or something.
They remade it, didn't they, around then? Maybe that's when...
I went up for it. I didn't get it. Yeah, I remember now. It was with Hattrick, maybe.
How do you find it when you go up for stuff and you don't get it? What's the,
yes, I
what's
get
the general chat?
I got quite far with that... what's it called? Peep Show. To play Izzy City. To play Izzy City, but I didn't do Izzy
She was
City
only ever
going to well
play
Izzy.
There was no one else. Yeah. There was no one else.
And then Izzy City, who I love, you know, I love her so much. Oh. I don't want to see Izzy City again after that. No.
Yeah,
that's...
It's really hard. People need to understand this. They need to understand the mechanics of... Well, I'm gonna call it failure. You're an incredibly successful act, Nina. That's not, we don't have to worry about that. But in terms of all the things you go up for, TV shows and sitcoms and stuff, it means I am always surrounded. There's so many things on TV that I maybe had a meeting for early on, or maybe did the pilot for.
Yeah, some of those lives you didn't live. Yeah.
All those, I know. It is quite tough. I mean, we are really going for crocodile tears, aren't we?
Oh, you know, I mean, and also I'm delighted that I didn't do acting. I mean, I'm delighted that I ended up being a ventriloquist, even though that seems like a tough swap. I think the powerlessness, I also go into auditions with a need, you know, like nobody wants, you know, this like a neediness that I bring. Even if I'm thinking, oh, well, you don't really want this, so you don't have to bring your neediness. As soon as I'm in the room, I'm all like, help. Yeah. It's not the right vibe.
It's not the right vibe to give off, and it's so true. If I had the only way to get parts is to the way I think the best way to get parts is to have 9 auditions a week, so that you're just bouncing from one to the other thinking I don't give a fuck, and then you start to get parts. The problem you have is when you have one audition every couple of weeks or 3 weeks or whatever, and then in the old days before self-taping you'd turn up and you'd be like, I am ready to lead this new life, you know, and it's and the casting people smell that on you.
Oh, God, you can smell it on yourself. It's really a terrible pheromone. You can't get rid of it.
It's like sort of sausages, isn't it? Onion-y.
Yeah, not nice. Yeah, onion. This need smells like onion. God. Gross.
Please don't fry onions, darling. I can't smell the need. It's true, though. It's true. They both lead to tears. Oh, mama made me butter toaster. Shops just like a roller coaster. Oh, don't it feel so fine when you're buying all of these strange things online, like books, weight sets, and posters. Come on, hear the best of the best of my mate, what a toaster. The ventriloquism thing, when did that kick off for you? And was there a moment when you just thought, I can't keep going up for the acting stuff, I'm going to become a vent, or did it not quite work like that?
Well, I was acting, but I was doing tiny parts at the Royal Shakespeare Company, which was fun because it was a great big company and everything, but I had really silly parts where you just stand in a dress and look at what the people who have the lines are saying and pretend you're interested and stuff. And then there were... It kind of dwindled out to you were doing sort of one show a week and I had these long days to fill. And I remember making a list. I mean, this is so, like, it's such a weird debutante existence to be making a list of what you might do in the day. You know, I might go for a walk and then I'll have a coffee and then I'm going to... I remember practice the didgeridoo was on there between 11 and 12. You know, how things could have been different if I'd have stuck to that. But then between, you know, 2 and 3, I was going to practice ventriloquism because I had this teach yourself ventriloquism kit that was a gift from Ken Campbell. I thought I must get around to that. And so I practiced that just in the day in my bedroom and made a little video of it and was alarmed when I watched the video back because it looked like I had company. And I remember thinking, that's a good illusion. I believe that thing is real.
Yeah.
Even though my lips weren't moving very much, I was like, that's alive, that fucking thing. So it
that is so lush. Was kind that of is so lush.
Late 20s. I guess I was about 27 or something when I started, which is fairly late.
I mean, yeah, because ventriloquism, I often think of it in terms of that sort of close-up magic thing. You get those, no offense, but you do get it does attract a nerdy type of man in their early teens, maybe, who gets really obsessive about it, maybe. Have I been judgmental?
No, you might very well be right. I don't know. It's probably, well, I think it worked for me because I was a little shy. I hadn't really found my voice and I was trying to be a good girl. You know, I was trying to be, I don't know, it's just drummed into me to be a good girl. And so this was, I could still...
What do you mean a good girl? What do you mean a good girl? Like positive, nice, upbeat, never cynical, never dry.
Exactly. Yes. And to roll with every punch and chin up and get on with it and be nice and be good and all that. Be a daughter, be a good daughter kind of thing. And, but obviously there are objections, unspoken objections that sort of start to build up and little other things, you know, not to be too crude and... I don't know. I didn't talk much at sort of gatherings, dinner parties. Probably wouldn't speak. I'd laugh politely and stuff. And then so this other thing, this like ventriloquism, it suddenly I had a weapon. It was and I didn't have to be accountable for it either. So it was like it really suited me. I thought this can give me a dimension that I'm not used to showing or that I think I'll get in trouble if I show.
It's so true, though, that the... Not the kind of damage is an overstatement, but the kind of negativity of feeling like the shy person with a voice that can't get out. And then to suddenly be given that opportunity means that it's all the better. Whereas if you just had that when you were 20 without any of the damage, it wouldn't be very interesting. But it's the fact that you gave that voice so much of the edge that had been building up. So you kind of, what I'm sort of getting around to saying is, you kind of had to go through the suffering to make that voice really authentic and make it
work. For it to have something to say. Yeah.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly. And also how lush that it was Ken Campbell who was... So tell us about your relationship with Ken Campbell. You trained with him and stuff?
Well, I just sought him out and hung around him. And he had just an unofficial sort of bunch of actor sort of disciples that I became one of. I mean, he had that charisma that people would just do his bidding and hang out in that scene. So that's kind of what it was.
So he was a cult leader. Okay, he was a cult leader. Sure.
Exactly.
Sure, sure.
It was very culty, very culty.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense.
and so I also, as this person who I was in my early 20s, still unformed and everything, I noticed that Ken had something to offer, an ingredient that I contained none of, which was quite... not giving a God-given shit what people thought of him and saying anything. He didn't need a monkey. He was straight out the gate as uncensored as you like. So I found that fascinating. I thought I need some of that to rub off on me. But he was very scary too. So, I mean, I'm proud that I stuck by him. Someone so frightening when I was so meek, but I knew it was what I needed.
But he obviously saw something in you.
I guess so. Yeah, he did. I mean, I don't know how, but he did. I remember, and he said, I mean, I've said this before, he said, you're like a clown that doesn't want to wear the nose. So when he came with the ventriloquism, he'd like found a way around that.
Yeah, put the nose on your hand.
Yeah.
Fuck, I love it. I love it. All right, then. Let's move on, shall we? 10th of November, 2010 now, Nina.
Yes.
£126. Ooh, someone's spending their telly money. Oh, look at this. What do you care to try and remember? Come on, 10th of November, 2010. It's only a couple
November,
of years ago.
November. So we're running up to Christmas, aren't we?
Yeah.
Could be a gift for the kids or maybe for a hard drive or something like that or...
No, I'll tell you what it is to us. It's the Tefal Active Fry Low Fat Electric Fryer.
That is so funny. Man, that sorts out an aubergine. Because aubergines are very, you know, they're sponges for oil and they're fiddly to cook. But that Active Fry, you know, like a teaspoon, a tablespoon of oil. And it's sort of slowly whizzing round, slowly frying and dehydrating as it goes. You get a nice crispy aubergine in there. add some seeds and soy sauce.
I've often thought you should sort out an aubergine. You've sorted those pricks out because you're right. They're oil magnets. Those bad boys.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah, and you think, God, I wanted a vegetable, and now I'm eating half of my oil bottle.
Yeah, this is just a vehicle for oil. Mm-hmm. This is not. I wanted to do it at all. Yeah. All right, so the low-fat electric fryer. Do you still have the low-fat electric fryer in your life?
No, it became really gross and clogged. Yeah, and then you know how things that go on the top shelf of the, like above the shelves in the kitchen, like you put them up high because you don't use them much, and they get that sticky way?
Oh, it's because, yeah, it's sort of oil vapor and dust.
Yeah, and it's absolutely gross, and you touch it and it's on your fingers for ages afterwards. It became one of those, and I just had to throw it away.
Yeah, R.I.P. R.I.P. to the electric fat fryer.
Yeah.
You'll meet again. Okay, good. So we are moving on to 2011 now. Okay. Can you just meet? There's a real... Now, listen. What's going on here, please, Nina? Because 2010, you bought 10 items, okay, in 1 year.
Right.
All right. And then in 2011, 103 items in 1 year.
Do you know what this must be? The buy it now button.
Deadly. Absolutely deadly.
I think that there became an app and there became a swipe and something was just really easy to buy. And I have another baby by now and I'm sure I'm buying all kinds of breast pumps and gross stuff like that.
Yes, bras. I can see that. Yes.
Bras.
Yeah, 29th of January 2011, you've got the Gina Ford, The New Contented Little Baby book, The Secret to Calm and Confident Parenting.
Oh, fuck that book. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe that book's right, but all the books that give you advice, man, they just fill you with indecision because they're sometimes so against instinct. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, man. So Gina Ford really divides the parenting community. I mean, it is. So basically, with Gina Ford, you have to build this very, very tight structure. Every day has to be the same. 9:05 milk, 10:00 nap, 11:00 wake them up. Even if they're still asleep, wake them up. Do this kind of play.
It's all that. It's a total boot camp, isn't it?
It is, baby. Booty camp. little baby booty camp. And it is absolutely rigorous. And it means you don't have much freedom to do stuff. So you'd often get like other parenting pals and you'd be like, oh, do you want to go to the park? Oh, I can't do 2:00. No, because that's when he has his nap and I can't move. You know what I mean? So it's very restrictive.
It's very restrictive. It really is. But then I went the other way. I mean, I guess that was my second child. So I was thinking, well, maybe I should have done that first time around.
Yes, yes.
So I'll be a bit harsher this time. And because it's all like leave them to cry and stuff, isn't it? But I couldn't do the leave them to cry. I do the bring them into your bed and, you know, make them feel like if you're not there, that the world is ending. And so I created incredibly codependent, you know, sleepers.
Never leave me. He's 15 now. No. He can only sleep next to mother. Yeah. This is definitely the way to do it. And also, there's something about the second kid, because you've seen it happen with the first kid. You've seen the mistakes you've made, and you've also seen how the first kid gets more and more independent gradually over the first however many years. And you do think with the second one, you are my little baby. You're never leaving daddy's side.
Yeah. Whoa. I know. It's funny talking about that. I didn't know that this was... I thought it was all going to be like, I don't know, salacious purchases, but it's really taking me into the early days of mothering.
Yes, good. I mean, we can make it salacious, Nina. At the drop of a hat, look at this. Original nursing bra double plus.
Ooh, four.
That's more like it.
Yeah. I know. You can you can reveal one breast at a time with a bra like that.
If you want to do some sort of strip show later on after the baby's gone to bed. I mean, it is incredible. You could almost opening one sort of cup at a time, you can almost signal. Like bringing in a plane with the ping pong paddle butts.
Something that sort of connects to ventriloquism somehow too. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
There's an act. I can't be the same always.
I can't. Hi, I'm Scott Hancock and I host From Queer to Eternity, a new podcast exploring what it means to be queer, where we have conversations like this.
I look at younger generations and go, you can just Google this stuff.
The fact that the only mention of queerness was don't get AIDS.
If I'd been marrying a girl, that would not have happened.
Maybe we can find a universality that we weren't aware of before.
That's why this podcast is so great, because actually, well, I guess we just don't think to speak of this stuff, and yet it's part of our fabric.
From Queer to Eternity, available to listen to now from the Great Big Owl Company.
All right, Nina, we're moving on then to 2012. You know, there's some great stuff here. We've got a lovely 3.5mm stereo jack cable. It's a classic cable. Just a jack to jack, mate. Yeah, male to male. Lovely to see. $4.99. Lovely bit of cabling you got there.
Yeah, all right. Well, I was actually at the time, because Ken Campbell had died by then and left me all his puppets in his will. And I decided to have one final Ken adventure and take them to this graveyard in Kentucky where the puppets of dead ventriloquists go to rest. And I wanted to make a film about it. So I started... I couldn't sell this idea to any TV companies or get any money for it. So I thought I'll do it myself. So I went on a filming course with documentary filmmakers to learn how to use a camera and edit and all that kind of thing, the front line. And then I started buying kit and everything. So I think there might be a lot of kit about to arrive.
Yes, lots of earphones. Lots
but
of
maybe,
earphones.
But maybe, I mean, I bought the good stuff from probably, yeah, I bought that from somewhere else in Soho. But yes, there will be little bits of kit now because I'm fancying myself as a solo journalist.
I see. Nina Conti, the guerrilla journalist, the auteur, the ventriloquist auteur. Hang on. So this is, there's a lot to unpack here. So Ken Campbell left you his dummies in his will. That must have been a deeply moving moment when you discovered that.
Yeah, it was surprising. Shocking. Yeah. It was shocking to be part of the will. I mean, good Lord.
Oh, my God. You didn't have to go and sit at a will reading, did you?
No, I didn't. But his daughter called me and she said, you're in the will and you're the only other person that's in the will. Everything goes to me, but you get this. And it was such a funny and specific stipulation to have put it in the will. I mean, that if that isn't a goading into some sort of action, I don't know what is. It really is.
You have to do something.
Crazy to me. Yeah.
So tell us about this thing. Did you? There's a place in Kentucky where all dummies are sent to be buried, right? Or interred.
Yes, and it's called Vent Haven. You can walk around it and you can see them all glassy-eyed and voiceless. And it's very eerie.
Too bloody right it is. That's a horror film waiting to happen.
Yeah, I know. It really is. And they come alive at night or something. But I don't know. They're so voiceless. Those voices that felt like the voices were in those bodies it's silent. So it feels more quiet than most museums because of the lack of talking of these things.
And did you take Monkey with you? He must have been shitting himself.
Yeah, I did take Monkey. And I wonder, I mean, I think Monkey might end up there. I've got several monkeys, you know.
Yeah.
One for the kids to continue. Mm. One for Vent Haven. One for my coffin.
Just to really fuck up archaeologists when they find you in thousands of years. She must have led these people. So did you go and film all this stuff? And what happened to all the footage?
I made a film out of it and... yeah, I made a film out of it, and it's on Amazon Prime.
There you go. It all comes back to Amazon.
Yeah, okay. Bring us back to Amazon. Yeah, it's called Her Master's Voice, and it's a documentary. And BBC Four bought it and showed it, which was very nice.
So it's called Her Master's Voice, and it's on Amazon Prime now.
Yeah.
That was me doing my trailer voice. Did you like that?
Thank you.
It's on Amazon Prime now. All right then, Nina, let's move on ahead then, shall we? Let's crash on through. We're going through to, where are we now? 2013 now. Let's have a little look of it. Ooh, car seat covers, beige design. Oh, Nina,
gross.
You had to live. Gross. Oh, what's going on here?
What's going on? That sounds awful. But beige seat covers. God, gross. And are they fluffy?
No. Beige car seat covers, classic car mats, UM5 luxury cars. How can we go from the exquisite, touching story of going to a ventriloquist's mausoleum to beige car covers? Large cargo liner car boot mat, washable. Have you got a dog maybe at this point?
No, I've just got messy kids. And I think I'm, it's all raisins down the back. I don't know, spilled smoothies and so on. I think I did buy an old beige Mercedes. So I just went kind of beige. If you think of it like 1970s kind of cop series that kind of beige. You could try and eke some
cool
out of it.
Stop trying to make beige cool, Nina. Yeah. Stop it. It's not going to work.
No.
All right, so beige.
And I don't think I managed to get them on. I think they maybe went straight in the bin. I think I got very angry, upside down around the back of the car, trying to fit them. That's the kind of thing that can make me go into a rage.
You just walked away, in the bin, gone.
Yeah. Oh, fuck these. They're trying to ruin my life.
What does Nina Conti in a rage look like? Is it a swear word scenario? Do you physically damage things? Because I'm a physical damager. I once smashed a printer up. I punched a printer and smashed it to pieces about 20 years ago, and I still think about it to this day.
Really? Yeah. Well, some things deserve it. Yeah.
Well, it's true, actually. I still think about it because that printer still fucks me off to this day. Yeah.
The thing that I did, I'm not proud of this because it's petulant and very childish. You know, it's ridiculous. But my glasses fall off when I bend down to do anything. If I'm looking for something in a drawer my clothes are in a sort of a trough at the moment. I haven't really got a proper drawers. And so I bend down to look for clothes that are all on top of each other in this trough and my glasses fall off into the trough. And then, so I took my glasses off when they were about to fall off and threw them on the floor because that's where they wanted to be. Well, see how you like it.
Yes,
down they went. Fuck you, glasses. Instantly, oh shit, did I break them? But
that is so true. Giving inanimate objects what they clearly want. That is... I have done exactly the same thing. This is definitely a piece of stand-up in this, right? When I get stuff out of the washing machine and a few socks and pants often sort of fall out, you get the rogue bits that fall out as you take away from the washing machine to the dryer. And several times, if one drops, I'm like, fine, fuck you. And I get the other one in that pair. I'll look for it and throw that one on the floor as well. Obviously, you want to be together on the floor in the dust, you pricks.
Really? Well, that's also quite considerate. But with a dirty wash that you're about to put in gets mixed with those ones that come out that are a bit wet and you don't know what's wet and what's dirty. I mean, that's...
Just fuck those pricks. I've come close to... you know, like if you spill a bit of tea, I've had rages where I've thought, I'm just going to pour the whole tea on the floor. It's exactly the same thing because I think this is what the tea wants.
Yeah, see how it likes it.
Oh, look, 12th of February 2013, the deluxe lace-up clown shoes. Yes.
Oh, Christ. Oh. This takes me into deep pain. This is me being a save the world giggle doctor in the hospitals. I'm taking my comedy into the hospital children's wards to be a goody two shoes. And I am hopelessly bad at it.
Oh,
and
Nina.
I'm creating trauma to sick children. And then after a 2-year escapade, I admit defeat and leave and stop it.
I don't know what question to ask first.
I thought this was magic and I'd seen it done really well. And so I felt this calling and thought, well, this is magic, because these kids, when you get a good one, a kid can forget they're sick for a bit. Yeah. Or they might not have. And hospital life is awful. Yeah. The nurses,
they must get so bored. They must get so bored.
But yeah, it's lonely and there's just a sort of iPad and you just kind of, they can stop being like a kid after a while. And so when you get a good hospital clown, and clown's a bit of a dirty word, so we're just talking about someone who's sort of entertaining and funny, but not someone scary with a painted face and a squirty flower and all that crap.
Oh, but you have got the big clown shoes here, though. You did buy the big clown shoes.
I did buy it. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. It's just dreadful. Oh, awful. Horrible. Horrible.
What happened? You're turning into monkey. I can hear monkey's voice coming out.
Yeah. Oh, regret. But yeah, so then I started to learn clown and do, you know, all that Goliath and all that stuff that everybody in the comedy industry dips a toe into. Phil Berger's Dr. Brown did some really good clown courses, and you start to learn that clown is like this cool thing. But I wasn't very good at it. Sorry, I lost my way there. What was I talking about? So when you see a good giggle doctor, You see, the parents are sort of crying and thanking you and saying, you know, we haven't seen him smile in day, you know, there's that kind of thing.
So you're after that. You're after that ultimate reward for you as a performer. What a wonderful thing to feel. And what happens to you?
Oh, my God. Exactly. Look at that. And look at the ego that you're bringing in to be a saviour. It's really, it's dicey.
Yes,
it's a dicey area. And yes. And you just, the imposter syndrome comes in hot. And then... you're bringing all your baggage, like, am I in this for the wrong reason? Or that? Just get out the hospital. Oh, sort God. Your mind out outside the children's ward. And don't bring your shit in here.
Please tell me you weren't going up to the kids going, sorry, you're quite a tough crowd, guys. What's wrong?
Come on, please tell me you weren't doing that.
No, I absolutely wasn't. So, it's heartbreaking in there. It's heartbreaking.
I know, and I can imagine. And God bless you for doing this. Honestly, Nina, that's a beautiful thing to do.
Well, I really think people who are good at it should keep on, you know, getting funded and everything.
Do you do it to, like, all of them, or do you go from bed to bed? And do you have to do, like, 5 minutes? How does it, like, how is
Well, you kind of have to be invited. So you'll, like, take an interest in the water cooler, and you know, like, be funny around the water cooler and see if you hear them laughing, but you're not like going up to their bed and doing stand up at them.
No.
It's sort of like blow bubbles or something, see if they want it, and then you kind of, it's that sort of approach.
I want to know if there's some sort of charity that funds hospital clowns, because I feel like that's something I'm going to give money to. No, because I think that's
yes,
just
there
the
is.
Most beautiful
I'm a patron,
thing.
And they're called the Giggle Doctors. And
the Giggle Doctors. Yeah. Okay, let's do a big plug. The Giggle Doctors, because that's just—I didn't realize it was such a thing. I didn't realize.
Yeah, it is. It's a big thing, and I think it must be quite hard right now if everybody's having to wear masks. I don't think that. Well, they might be all right with it. They might. They'll probably find ways to still do it.
I love that you've become a patron. Did one of the nurses sidle up to you one day and say, "Listen, would you rather be a patron? Would that be easier?"
Yeah, I know, exactly. I thought I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do my work in a different way.
All right, okay.
Very long hours, very hard work. It's very long hours.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure doctors listening to this are agreeing with you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God, oh, don't. Oh, shit. No, you're right. God. Ooh, my big boy, a toaster. My big boy, a toaster. Shopping on lines that have been so
far, my big boy. All right, 2015, Nina Conti, as we get towards the present day here on this week's My Mate Bought a Toaster. All sorts of stuff, all sorts of stuff. Loads of money on tech, you're buying gadgets. I'm guessing the kids are older now, because what have we got here? Stand By Me on Prime Video. Brilliant movie, of course. Fantastic Mr. Fox on Prime Video.
Oh, yeah.
This is when the kids get... It does get more fun with the kids when you can watch movies like this with them, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that's a cozy movie. Fantastic, Mr. Fox. Yes. Yeah, the music and everything. Yeah, I could watch that again and again.
Exactly. Cozy movies with the kids is the best bit. There are moments start to appear with the kids where you're like, oh, I see why I'm in this now. I love this. Mary Poppins, again, classic example. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. 9th of September 2015, the Sasha traditional French market basket with long and short leather handles. Very nice. You've bought a load of baskets. Fucking hell, what's going on here? 9th of September... on the same day, you bought four shoulder baskets. You bought a load of wicker baskets. Why?
No, I'm not going to the beach. I'm putting a monkey in them and going on stage. So they have to. A monkey bag needs to have a robust and open top. You can't have it zipping and flapping. It has to be easy in out for the hand plunge of the puppet. So that's what those are.
Right, you see, we're really seeing behind the curtain here.
Yeah.
This is excellent.
And to actually literally go behind the curtain, I'm standing in the wings about to go on and monkey's in the bag. And sometimes I just put my hand in to him and have him turn his face up to me. And I look at him for moral support.
Do you feel it? Do you feel that?
I turn his face and his look says to me, I got this.
Oh, Nina, I love it.
And I go, okay, you got this. All right, we'll go out. You'll be fine.
Oh, that's so lovely. Could you imagine doing stand-up without the monkey next to you?
No, I only did it once when I forgot the monkey. But I spent the whole gig talking about what the monkey would say and how it was a lot harder coming out of my mouth. It was kind of a funny gig, but I don't want to do it again and again.
Please tell me you didn't turn up at a gig without your monkey.
I did. I forgot the monkey. And so then I would go, hi, sir, what's your name and what do you do? Well, that sounds shit. You know, it was really different with me saying it. I mean, yes. That's not a very good joke, is it? But I mean,
I know, in the moment, I could imagine that working. That's the sort of, to be honest, Nina, that's the kind of kit I was using. I was doing that. Big fan.
Yeah, that's just insulting. But with me apologizing for it when monkey's there is less disingenuous than when I say it and I go, oh, sorry. I don't know. It really brought my act down to its bare bones.
Amazing.
Insult and apology. But I enjoyed it because of the fear and the special uniqueness of not having monkey. But I don't think that would carry on for a whole run. I think it was a one-off.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I got away with.
Amazing.
But no, I'm not really. I'm not. I think better in plural, really, on stage. I think it's nicer to have two voices.
Yeah. I just love how, I mean, he really has become his own voice to the point where he looks at you and wishes you good luck before the gig. I mean, that is, you know,
yeah, it's sick, that is, isn't it?
It's fantastic. It's
yeah,
brilliant.
It's full now. It's full blown.
It is.
I just don't know. Yeah, it's really weird because I look back on working with that monkey now 20 years or something, and I don't remember being him all that time. I feel like he was there.
Yeah.
So a trick has happened in my brain. I've fallen for my own illusion. Oh, yeah, and then monkey said that. I'm like, no, monkey never said anything. You said all of it.
God, it's amazing. There is something very borderline psychotic about it. It's incredible.
Yes,
it's incredible.
Yeah.
But that shows you, I think that just shows you the strength of the character. Like, he's become his own thing. And writers talk about this all the time, about all their characters doing their own thing. That's just, you've just written a character who happens to sit on your hand a lot.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
trying to make you feel better about some quite worrying symptoms. All right. Okay. Well, let's move on. Listen, what we're going to do now, Nina, as we get towards the end of this episode, and thank you so much for I'm going to put it frankly, oversharing. It's been excellent. 2020, I don't know if you know, but there was a little bit of a pandemic that happened over 2020. So it's a good year for us to see what's going on with you. Started off 22nd of January 2020. You bought a Forum Buffalo adult costume mask. You bought a big mask of a buffalo with horns and everything. Do you want to explain yourself?
Yes. Yes. So I started doing an act with Shanoa Allen, Shanoa and the Buffalo. And I dress as a full-sized buffalo. It's like I've become the puppet. And so we had this show. That was just a prototype, and then had one made by the woman who makes all the Star Wars characters. She's really top end. And she made this fantastic buffalo, cost the earth. And we were about to go to the Melbourne Comedy Festival with Shanoa and the Buffalo. But then we didn't. But
then stuff
I've got
happened.
This fabulously unused buffalo in my house now.
Wow. Wow. Very, very hard to sell a second-hand buffalo costume. One careful lady owner. Doesn't, you know what I mean? Not sure that's going to sell. Refurbished buffalo, anyone? But that will come back. Surely, eventually, you will be doing that. Right?
Yes, I think we will do it eventually when the world comes back. But it's funny when the ideas that you're about to do before this happened, it's a little strange to go back to them as if nothing happened. I don't know, the changes in yourself and your tastes are imperceptible, but you think, well, I can't just pretend nothing's happened. You have to kind of do a redo on, I don't know. I mean, I do want to do it, but I can't just go straight into it like pretending nothing happened.
Yes.
And it will be a different show now.
Of course. And this is, but everyone's got this now, you know. I look at my wardrobe and I'm like, who's that guy? If the world goes back to normal, I'm not going to wear any of these. I don't like these anymore. It's so strange. It is like, it's like when we go back to the real world, it will be like going back in time. It will literally be like time traveling to however long ago it will be by the time life gets back to normal again. And and we'll be like, I'm not sure I want to do that. And that works for clothes. That works for all your creative ideas, all the writing. It
the mood has changed so dramatically. It's really weird.
Yeah. And that buffalo, that when I was, I did do some previews at the Soho Theatre, at that buffalo, when I was being the buffalo, I crowd surfed. So that's like, that's out. And I loved crowd surfing in that big buffalo costume. It was amazing. And then other things, like I would get people's water bottles and pour them into my eyes to drink. And like, I had all these tricks, but they're so like touchy and involved. And yeah, that's sad. So what would it be now? A buffalo standing at a distance? I don't know.
Physical comedy with social distancing is very, very hard. You can't push the envelope because you can't lick the envelope. It's very tricky.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so hard. You have an interesting relationship with animals because, you know, if you haven't got an animal sitting on your hand or if you're not dressed as an animal yourself, you're also waging war on them here on the 8th of March 2020, just before lockdown happened. Nina Conti was buying bird spikes to keep the pigeons away.
Yeah, they were noisy. Oh my goodness, it was quite noisy, but it was above my kid's bedroom,
right?
And he wasn't sleeping, so we had to put deterrent spikes. Isn't that awful? But I don't think any pigeons were harmed. I think they were just put off. And I did get somebody to come and lift the thing on the roof to make sure there were no eggs under there, and there were no eggs under there.
Did you? That's very nice of you.
Well, I cannot live with the thought of a hatching dying.
Oh, God. No. Yeah, no, that is
no,
bad.
No.
That's bleak. Yeah. That is bleak. The final thing for today's show. And here we are, March 2021, as, you know, hope and optimism starts to course through everyone's veins, along with, of course, the vaccine for many people. And here you are looking for something else in your veins. You've bought some Patron Silver Tequila.
Ah, yeah.
For £42.50, along with 12 Boston shot glasses. Someone's having an illegal party. Doo-dah, doo-dah. Busted.
Yes, I went on a diet. I put on weight during lockdown, and then I grew to a point where I was sick of myself. And so I went on a keto diet and cut booze out for a month.
Did it work?
As a reward. Yes, it has worked and is still working. I'm about a month in. So no booze. Also because I was drinking beer every night. I mean, what else is there to do?
Exactly.
I was on four cans of San Miguel every night. That was just like on a non-drinking night. So 1 month, no drinking. And then, but that was going to be the party when I celebrated 1 month, which was the night before last. So we had, it was ridiculous. It's like adults playing make-believe. We had mariachi music on, candles and lemon and salt and these little shot glasses.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, well, one shot, when you haven't had a drink for a month, one shot gets right to the point, and it was really fun. It was fun. But now I have to go back to not drinking again because it's a bit too fun. So I'm going to do another, I don't know what I'll do, 2 weeks or something before the next party.
I think it's a great rhythm to get into, just to go weeks and weeks without drinking and then get absolutely fucked on silver tequila once a month. That's an incredible routine, like on a full moon.
Yeah, a full moon. But it was kind of Richard and Greta. It was me and Shanoa who do the podcast, Richard and Greta. And so we kind of did it. We had our party as Richard and Greta, and we talk about that in our next podcast.
Excellent.
So Richard and Greta had the tequila party.
Okay, so it's worth saying, listen out for that. Richard and Greta, a brand new podcast, which is available on Great Big Owl. It's a brilliant, brilliant podcast. I mean, are they sexperts? Is that the right way to describe them, Nina?
Well, I wouldn't say they were in any way expert on things, but they're certainly unqualified. But they love to talk and investigate every possibility to do with a relationship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very proud of their relationship, and so they only want to help others get as much as they get out of each other. It's pretty, I mean, they're deeply in love, you know.
Yeah.
deeply in love. It's a very lurid and wholesome kind of relationship.
We love lurid. So that's Richard and Greta, which is available now on Great Big Owl. And if you listen to more recent episodes, you'll probably be able to smell the tequila coming across the airwaves you know, you've got to have tequila before your podcast. I had six before we started this. It's the only way to do it. I mean, and also how wonderful that we find you, you know, lighting candles to drink tequila and make a podcast. You know, we started with you driving around Brent Cross depressed with a kid in the back of the car. And here you are getting pissed in your kitchen making a podcast on tequila. It's a happy story.
Well, thank you for the journey, though. It's been really interesting.
Oh, Nina, I'm logging out of your account. That's it. I'm leaving it as we speak. Thank you so much for joining
me. So that litre bottle of lube you didn't notice or...
Oh, yeah. Fuck! I did notice it. I just wrote a review underneath with your name. Nina Conti, thank you for joining me on My Mate Bought a Toaster. You're absolutely brilliant, and what a wonderful array of random stuff and random things you've been getting up to. That was so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you, baby, and I
want you for the rest of my day. The very, very brilliant and very sober throughout this podcast, Nina Conti. And do check out Richard and Greta. It's a very, very funny, brand new podcast from Great Big Al. It is ace. Thank you very much for listening. And that is it for today. I'll be back next week. Cheers now.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter @FriendsWF.